Hey there, all you serial killer fanatics. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Corey.
Welcome to Serial Killer Tuesday. Here at SKT, we talk about the nitty-gritty of all things serial killers. Want to know what makes some of the most prolific murderers tick? Yeah, so do we. We're just two best friends who love to talk about true crime and wanted to provide you, our new best friend, a place to talk about it too. New episodes will air every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Each month, we will discuss the depravity of a new serial killer with weekly deep dives into their lives. Stop by for the stories, stay for the fun. Here's a fun little fact for you. You can walk past at least 36 serial killers in your lifetime.
Oh, well, that's a creepy fact. Hope it's not one of us. Ha ha. Also, I wanted to let you know that today I'm coming to you live from my car.
Hey, hot dog!
Yeah, we're having our floors redone today. Well, this week and next week, and it's way too noisy.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Welcome to Corey's car.
Carcast.
Oh, yeah, it's a like carcast.
It's like car karaoke, but car casting.
Ooh, I like karaoke. That sounds fun. Ooh.
Yeah. So, car casting 101. It's pretty comfortable.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I'm coming to you live from today.
Hey, we would never have known it if you didn't tell us. It sounds normal.
Well, I just wanted to share, you know.
I like it.
Since I'm sharing all things weird houseness.
I think I'm finally over the vid. Like, I'm at least alive.
That's good.
I know.
You do sound a lot more coherent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My brain doesn't think so. I forgot to record this today, but that's okay. We'll get him next time, Tiger.
It's okay.
Good thing I have an alarm set to go get my kids. Otherwise, whoopsie doopsie.
They're like, Mom. Mom.
It's not even funny. So I think it was Thursday. I was like 10 minutes late to school and I felt so awful, but I was so, so sick and I slept through my alarm and then I got stuck in like the worst traffic and I was like, I'm the worst parent ever. Emmy's like, Mom, I thought maybe you got in a car accident. And I'm like, no car accident. She's like, did you not set your alarm? And I'm like, I did. I just slept through it. I'm sick. Leave me alone.
You're like, stop talking to me.
Oh my gosh, I know. Poor things. They went and spent the weekend with Grandma and Papa because Mommy was near death. And they had a half day on Friday. And there was no way that I was going to be able to go get them and come home and sleep.
No.
No. That was the day I called you crying because you're like, my head hurts. I don't feel good. But I'm alive and kicking.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
You know, it's nice to be here. I'd like to thank the Academy.
Yeah. For your award.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Thanks.
Go team Amanda.
Go team. We kick COVID's butt, hopefully. Nobody else is going to get it.
Oh, yeah. God, I hope so.
I know.
That would suck.
I agree.
Please be aware that this episode really does require listener discretion. We talk about lots of sexual things. So if you don't want your kids to listen, now is a good time to turn that off.
Okay. Mia, turn off your podcast. This is not appropriate for you.
Right. So welcome back to SKT or Serial Killer Tuesday. Or Amanda and Corey's Best Friend Podcast, whatever you want to call us.
Or the CarCast.
Or the CarCast. This is episode 2 of Dean Corll. As you recall, in the first episode, we did a little deep dive into Dean's background and found out about him and his family, who he was, how he got his nickname, the Candyman. If you remember, he and his family used to own a candy factory, and he passed out free candy to kids. That's not at all creepy.
Don't take candy from strangers.
Right. or from strangers in vans.
Especially if they're in a van.
Mm-hmm. So he had two accomplices, Elmer Henley and David Brooks. And today we will get into Dean's murderous side.
I like that.
So, Dean would find his victims using Henley as Brooks as the lures. He would then pay Henley and Brooks $200 per head when they would bring the victims home to him. No one is sure when the exact date of Coral's first murder was, but Brooks is said to have placed it sometime in the mid-1970s. The first victim to endure Dean and the boys' sadistic side was a college student named Jeffrey Cohen.
$200 in the 70s was a lot of money.
Yeah, it was. And he killed 28 kids. Like, that's, he's just forking out the cash.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't always give him money, though.
Well, so I just looked it up. And the value of $200 from 1970 to today is $1,542.11 today.
Oh my gosh. So if today he passed that out, he would have passed out $29,000.
Yeah.
Weird.
Wow.
I mean,
that's crazy.
A pretty lucrative career when you think about it.
Ooh.
$30,000.
Right? To have that on your conscience, though?
Yeah. I mean, you have to be pretty unconscionable, but.
Yeah, it's a no for me, dog.
Well, whatever.
It's a gosh. It's
an easy way to make 30 grand. Whatever.
So nitpicky.
Sorry, we're not making fun of this.
We're not. No. We're not. We're making fun of Corey. Talking about how lucrative murder could be. So Jeffrey was picked up while hitchhiking with another student from the University of Texas to his parents' home near Houston. He was dropped off alone from the person that picked him up first near the uptown area of Houston. When his parents reported him missing, the police told them that it was likely that he had, quote, taken off to California, and that he would eventually show up. However, that was not the case. It is likely that Coral offered Jeffrey a ride to his parents' house, which he accepted. At the time, Coral lived in an apartment on Yorktown Street, which was close to the intersection where Jeffrey was picked up. Jeffrey was manually strangled, gagged, his hands and feet were bound with a nylon cord, and he was sexually violated. Brooks was the one to show police where Jeffrey's body had been buried. He was located at High Island Beach. He was found buried under a large boulder, covered in a layer of lime and wrapped in plastic. He was also naked. He was Coral's second oldest victim.
So, around the time that Coral murdered Jeffrey, Brooks had walked into Dean's house and caught him sexually assaulting two teenage boys. Dean had strapped them both down to his four-poster bed. When Brooks confronted Dean, Dean promised to buy him a car. I mean, that makes sense. If he would promise not to tell anyone what he saw. So that is when Brooks actually got that 1969 Corvette. It was a little bit later when Dean informed Brooks that he had actually killed those two boys. It was at this time that Dean started offering Brooks $200 for any boy that he would bring back to Dean's apartment.
December 13th, 1970. Now Brooks was in it. He lured two 14-year-old Spring Branch boys named James Glass and Danny Yates away from a religious rally they were attending in Houston Heights back to Dean's Yorktown apartment. Brooks knew Glass from some previous encounters and had actually visited Dean's apartment before, so he wouldn't have been really suspicious of Brooks. Dean managed to tie both of the boys to opposite sides of his creepy torture board and then proceeded to rape and strangle them. These boys' disappearance was reported to the police as well. And, once again, they were classified as, quote, most likely runaways. Because Glass had once stayed with a friend during an argument with his father, and Yates had been seen at a house that runaways hung out at. Once Dean had killed them, he took both of the boys' bodies to the boathouse that he rented and buried them. When they were found, they had electrical cords with alligator clips attached to each end and buried with Yates.
The sad part about all of this is that investigators didn't have any evidence of foul play, and these boys had essentially just disappeared off the face of the earth. So they never really conducted an official search. The families of those two boys were basically on their own. So now we're going to fast forward to January 30th, 1971. Brooks and Coral were out creeping around, and they stumble upon two teenage brothers, Donald and Jerry Walrup, 15 and 13, respectively, walking home to their parents' house. They had both been at a friend's house where they had been dropped off earlier by their father to discuss a bowling league they wanted to start. Unfortunately for them, their friend was not home. Brooks and Coral somehow managed to get them into Coral's creepy van, probably with the promise of liquor or drugs or candy or all of it, and Coral drove them to his new apartment on Magnum Road, where he proceeded to rape, torture, and strangle them. He also told them that as a part of their torture, one of them would have to manage to beat the other one to death while still handcuffed with one hand to the board, and if they did that, that person would be freed. So they spent the day trying to beat each other with one hand until they were both almost dead. And then Coral strangled them to death and buried them in the rented boathouse again. Can you imagine having to beat your sibling so one of you is freed and able to live? I don't know if I could live through that.
No, I would lose for sure. My brother's a lot bigger than I am.
And he would hit you.
Oh God, he's mean.
I don't know if I could, I don't know. I think I'd either want us both to die or just, I don't know if I'd want to beat my sister to death while she beats me to death. I don't.
No, how awful. I don't awful. Know how I'm
That's terrible.
That's so the sad. Worst.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah. Mm-hmm. That takes creepy to a whole new level.
Yeah.
So now it's May 1971. And Dean had abducted and killed three more boys, with the help of Brooks. The first one was 15-year-old Randall Harvey. He was riding his bike towards Oak Forest on March 9th, when his family last saw him. He was on his way to the part-time job that he was working as a gas station attendant. His mother filed a missing persons report, even telling the police that he had a history with Brooks, who threatened to kill him over a stolen stereo. He was picked up by Dean and Brooks and then driven to Coral's Magnum Road apartment, where he was also raped and tortured. But he wasn't strangled. Instead, Dean shot him in the head, and he was also buried in the boat shed. However, due to a fire in the Harvey home, all the pictures were destroyed, and it would be 35 years before his remains were identified. Then, May 29th, 1971, Dean and Brooks this time picked up two boys, 13-year-old David Hillegeist and 16-year-old Greg Winkle. They were on their way to the swimming pool when their parents reported them missing. The police also classified them as runaways. However, both sets of parents knew that wasn't true. Hillegeist's family was leaving for vacation as soon as school let out. Coral raped, tortured, and had killed those two as well.
So, at this point, we're up to at least 8 missing and murdered boys, maybe more. At this point, the parents of these boys were launching frantic searches for their kids. One of the kids that voluntarily offered to distribute flyers with a monetary reward for information on David Hillegeist was none other than, you guessed it, Elmer Henley. This was right before Elmer Henley was taken into Dean Coral's fold. But Henley and Hillegeist were lifelong friends. Henley went around and hung up posters around Houston Heights and attempted to reassure his parents that there must be an innocent explanation of why he was missing. He even told Hillegeist's mother that David could be right under your nose and you wouldn't even realize it.
Oh my God.
This was just a little bit before he was introduced to Coral.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah.
So now we are into August. On August 17th, 1971, Coral and his ever-faithful companion Brooks encountered a 17-year-old friend of Brooks's named Reuben Watson Haney. Haney was walking home from the movie theater in Houston. Brooks convinced Haney to attend a party that they were having at Coral's new address, because he moved again, kind of his thing, on San Felipe Street. Haney thought this was a great idea and went with them to Coral's house. Where? You guessed it. He was raped, strangled, killed, and buried in the boat shed.
They had an easy time of getting all these kids to come back with them because Brooks was friends with a lot of them. So basically, he was just killing his friends and acquaintances.
Which is so awful.
Right? So now we're into September 1971, and Coral has moved yet again. He just really liked to move around to lessen the suspicion of the missing boys. I think that would make you more suspicious, but that's just me.
Right.
So this apartment was in Houston Heights, and Brooks assisted Coral in the murder and abduction of two more boys at this point. One of the boys was killed right before Brooks brought Henley into the murder pod. Brooks has stated this boy was abducted from the Heights, and actually, he was kept alive for 4 days before he was murdered. The identity of both these boys' remains is still unknown.
How?
That's also sad, too, right?
Especially the thing that 70s, this is your friend. So,
yeah. Yeah. You're moved to these parties with your so-called friend, and then you end up getting raped and murdered and strangled, and it's terrible.
So now it's the winter of 1971, and Brooks has just introduced Elmer Henley to Coral. It's likely that Henley was supposed to be Coral's next victim, but for some reason, Coral thought the boy would make a good second accomplice. He told Henley that he would give him $200 for any boy that Henley could lure to Coral's apartment, telling him that he was involved in a white slavery ring operation out of Dallas. So, when Henley was interviewed, he told investigators that initially, for several months, he ignored Coral's offer, but he still maintained a sort of relationship with him. And then he began to view him as a brother-type person that he could confide in. Then, early into 1972, he decided to accept Dean's offer because he and his family, unfortunately, needed the money.
Which, that's kind of sad, too. But that's I wonder how come he didn't, like, tell anybody. Like, he didn't go home and be like, hey, mom, or hey, police, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
Instead, you're like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead, take this because I need the money. Okay, so now that Henley's involved, he's decided that his first abduction with Coral was in either late February or early March of 1972. The pair picked up a boy in the Heights and lured him to Coral's apartment, which was now on Schuler Street, with the promise of marijuana. When the trio got to Coral's apartment, Henley, going with a ruse the pair thought up before they went out hunting, handcuffed his own hands behind his back and then freed himself with a key he had hidden in his back pocket. Smart, smart thinking. He then duped the teenager into trying it as well. Keep in mind, at this time, Henley was also a teenager. He was only 16.
Ugh.
Yeah. So once the teenager had handcuffed his own hands behind his back, Coral pounced on him, bound and gagged him. And then Henley left. He thought that Coral was just going to sell the youth into a sex slave ring like he had originally told him. The victim later was identified as William Branch, who was the son of a Houston police officer. Branch was tortured, castrated, and shot. He was buried in the floor of the boat shed. His poor dad would never know the terrible fate that his son had to endure, as he had had a fatal heart attack before William Branch's remains had been identified.
So what do you think is worse? the sex not slave knowing? Ring or no, I mean, that's terrible, but no, the sex slave ring, like you think you're leaving your friend or acquaintance, somebody, you know, somebody you go to school with, you pass this kid multiple times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You're leaving him in a sex slave ring or you're leaving him with someone who's going to murder him. Either way.
Like, why did you think that?
Right. Like, why did you think that's a good idea?
Because you needed $200.
Oh, my gosh.
Your family didn't have any money.
Ugh.
Which is sucky.
It is sucky.
It's sucky that you have to do something like that for money. Like, that I don't know.
Ugh.
It's awful. And then to have another 16-year-old try this trick, he's like, look, I can handcuff behind my back and get out. And then the other kid goes to do it, and then he's bound and gagged and tortured. You're like, bye.
Well, and I think that's almost what makes this case even worse than just, like, the depravity of it in general, is the fact that there were two kids who helped you murder other kids.
Right. The you same know, age. Like, they were the same age.
Like, I'm sure that, you know, the kids coming in, these young boys were like, oh, okay, well, you know, my friends are here. Them.
Yeah.
So I should be fine. Mm-hmm. Not even, I'm sure it was never even like, I should be fine. I'm sure the thought never even crossed their mind, like, oh, hey, I might be in danger. Or, you know, it's just like, oh, my friend's here. Cool. We're going to hang out. And then, not cool
and
anymore.
It's 1970. So no one really worried about any of that.
Right.
You did hitchhike a lot. You did get into other, you know, strange cars with people, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, there's more serial killers who picked up just hitchhikers because no one cared about that. They got in the car with whomever.
I did that like in Ed Kemper. Europe one time.
Mm.
Yes. Worst idea ever. It was like the scariest moment of my entire life.
Right. And that was before really we knew about like the sex trade ring or, you know, any of that.
Oh, God.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Before they made that more noticeable, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I just remember we were in Germany and we were staying at a hostel. And we were like, hey, we could legally drink. Let's go get some alcohol. Well, we didn't know how to get around. And I was with a friend of mine at the time. And she was like, it's going to be fine. And it was just her and I. And she was shorter than I am. And like, if you know me, I'm really tall. And
you are like a giant. I can't even believe you fit through the doors.
I know. You're so tall. I'm so tall. All 5'2" of me.
Right.
And yeah, I remember like we were in the back seat holding hands. And I'm like, I will never forgive you if you get us murdered. Why did I let you talk me into this? This is such a terrible idea. And like, you don't think about that as a kid. Because really, until we were driving away, I was like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right.
Like my parents have taught me for years and years and years, like, don't get in the car with strangers. And here I am
in a car with a stranger
in fucking Europe.
Right.
Like of all the places, the guy ended up being so nice. He was Polish and he was really nice. I'm sure he was just like, what the fuck are you doing? You dumb girls. I'm picking you up so you don't get murdered.
I guess really Uber and Lyft are getting in the cart with strangers.
That is true.
Which is paid for hitchhiking.
Yeah, you don't have to pay by lifting up your top anymore. Now you pay with money.
In an app. Woo-hoo! At least the app can track you, but it's still scary.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even trust my food going in the car with someone else. Like, I've never DoorDashed or anything.
Shakes.
No way. Nope. I'm too paranoid for that. Anyway, so about a month later, on March 24th, 1972, the Murdering Heights trio encountered an 18-year-old friend of Henley's named Frank Aguirre leaving a restaurant on Yale Street where he worked. Henley had called Frank over to Coral's van and invited him to drink some beers and smoke some weed with them at Coral's apartment. Frank agreed and followed the trio to Coral's house in his own car. When they got inside, Frank smoked marijuana with the group before he picked up some handcuffs that Coral had left on the kitchen table. When he did this, Coral pounced on him, pushing him back on the table and cuffing his hands behind his back.
Henley, later on, tried to claim that he didn't know what Coral's intentions were towards Geary when they first saw him, and persuaded him to go back to Coral's house with them. He also claimed to try and persuade Coral not to assault and kill him after he saw Brooks and Coral bound and gag him. He stated that Coral refused to listen to him and informed him that he had raped, tortured, and killed the previous victim that Henley had brought to them, and he was going to do the same to Geary. Henley also went to Geary's parents' house to pick up flyers that he was supposed to distribute as well. He dumped those in a ditch.
Of course he did.
Yeah. He even asked the family if they'd heard from Geary. After Coral killed Geary, Henley did help Brooks and Coral bury the youth at the High Island beach.
So, despite Coral telling Brooks and Henley that he was, in fact, killing the youths that they were bringing to him, they still continued to assist him in abducting them. They became active participants in both the abductions and the murders. On April 20th, 1972, Henley assisted Brooks and Coral in the abduction of a 17-year-old boy named Mark Scott. Mark had been reported as missing to the police by his parents as well. However, he had been in trouble for carrying a prohibited knife, so the police decided that he had run away to escape his legal troubles. Which, how much trouble would he have really been in back then?
Right, right. To run away.
It just seems so convenient that all these kids are just running away.
Mm-hmm.
So a few days after he went missing, Mark's parents received a postcard, allegedly from their son, stating that he had gone to Austin for a job that was paying $3 an hour so he could pay for an attorney. They knew that something terrible was happening, as he hadn't taken his beloved motorcycle with him. Scott, who was known to both Brooks and Henley, was grabbed by force and fought furiously against Coral's attempts to restrain him. He even stabbed them with a knife. However, he, quote, just gave up, according to Brooks, when he saw Henley pointing a gun at him. They then tied Scott up to the torture board, and Coral then raped, tortured, and strangled him, the same as he had done to Geary. Then they buried him at High Island Beach as well.
Oh, man. It doesn't get any better. So, Brooks has stated that Henley was especially sadistic in his participation in the murders committed at the apartment on Schuyler Street before Coral vacated it on June 26th. He moved around a lot. Henley assisted Coral and Brooks in the abduction and murders of two boys, Billy Blausch and Johnny DeLome. Billy was known to Dean as he had once worked for him, selling candy door to door. That's creepy. Murderous trio also tried to throw off the police with postcards allegedly from the boys sent to their parents. However, Billy's parents didn't believe that they had what they had written and that the handwriting was not that of their sons. They did report Billy missing to the police and had also informed the police that they knew when Billy had worked for Dean, he had given the youth marijuana. So these parents actually reported to the police that the teenagers knew Dean Coral.
And yet nothing was done.
Right. So when Brooks was confessing, he stated that they had tied both of the youths to Coral's bed and tortured and raped them. When they finished, Henley manually strangled Billy, then shouted, "Hey, Johnny," and shot him in the forehead with a bullet exiting through Johnny's ear. And if to make matters worse, Johnny did not die from that bullet wound. So Johnny was pleading with Henley, saying, "Wayne, please don't," before Henley strangled him. So then the trio took those pair of boys and buried them both at the High Island Beach location as well.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So those two boys can't say that they didn't know what was happening and didn't know what was going on for very long, because they started helping Henley, or they started helping Coral murder.
Ugh.
I don't know if they did much of like the sexual assaulting or the raping, but I'm sure they tortured and helped murder them.
It's like a pack mentality.
Right.
They like got all together and then like were feeding off of each other. Well, crime fans, that concludes this week's episode of Dean Coral, the Candyman. So make sure you tune in next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time for another episode about Dean's murderous rage. Thank you all for listening to Serial Killer Tuesday. We hope you have a great day wherever you are. And as always, stay safe.
Toodaloo, kangaroos. Corey out from the CarCast.
CarCast, woohoo! I like it. I gotta keep singing in every episode.
You do.
I sang in the last one. Or maybe the one before that. I don't remember now. My brain's not working.